back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road this week. We will be at Gunpowder Lodge for those folks out in Northeast Baltimore County. Everybody knows Perry Hall and Kingsville and the road on the Bel Air Road. Beautiful, beautiful park at Gunpowder at the bottom. Stop by between 2 and 5. Grab a lobster roll or a crab cake. My pal Danny Santoro, former soccer star, and getting ready for World Cup out there, as well as JR working the delicious lobster rolls and crab cakes and good stuff. We'll be there from 2 until 5. Brooke Learman running for controller. She'll be joining us. If you're a Barry Glassman fan up in Harford County, he joined us on Friday at Fadley's, where we had a beautiful, beautiful morning for my 54th birthday. I don't know that I could count that high. I spent the Sunday afternoon up in Cecil County, Perryville, at the Hollywood Casino, hanging out with Todd Heap. By the way, Luke, every time Mark Andrews caught the ball, they yelled Heap, you know, up there in Perryville. You know, we talked a lot about Lamar and a lot about the pass and a lot about the referendum on his money and like all of that. Let's talk about the rest of the offense, because as that goes, he goes. We've talked about Hollywood Brown not being available. We talked about Rashad Bateman not being available. Talked about Devin Duvernay as a one catch number one wide receiver. A little extra pressure on Mark Andrews, certainly, but all across the offense. I mean, Kenyon Drake appointed himself very, very well, you know, in the whole Alabama background and wearing the weird non-running back jersey. Looks like a wide receiver running around out there. Looks like a August wide receiver wearing number 17, you know, out there running around. But that being said, the running game worked when it worked on Sunday, and some would say maybe they didn't use it enough or effectively enough.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Giants team that hadn't been great stopping the run. You know, as much as we have given Wink Martindale his flowers and given the Giants coaching staff their props for
and the how victory the Giants belt on Sunday, by the way.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
But at the same time, the Ravens, I mean, they gashed him in the run game. There's no question about it. I mean, look at Kenyon Drake, who I have to share this because you mentioned Kenyon Drake, but I got a text from my mom. I guess it was a third quarter.
Big football fan, your mom.
And she said, I left Kenyon Drake on my bench on my fantasy football team. And I said to her, well, there was no logical reason. First of all, I can't believe you even had him on your roster. No disrespect to Drake, but I mean,
knows who Kenyon Drake is. She's a step ahead of my wife.
Sure. But she was lamenting not having him in her lineup. And I said, Mom, there would have been no logical reason to think that Kenyon Drake was going to run for 119 yards on 10 carries. I mean, you just don't expect that. 11.9 yards per carry. And as he mentioned, you know, because I had a chance to ask him in the post-game press conference, just, you know, just this idea that this guy was, you know, looked like he was on the way out. He had been a healthy scratch after J.K. Dobbins had come back. But as far as taking advantage of his opportunity, but he said, look, I mean, I'm happy with how I played, but so much of that was the offensive line. I wasn't even touched on some of those runs, which, you know, they did a fantastic job blocking. So, yeah, I mean, especially on the heels of John Harbaugh saying that J.K. Dobbins' knee tightened up a little bit in the second quarter and that he didn't play after that. And yeah, I don't think there's anything to be overly alarmed about. I think they're going to be very, very cautious, especially on that turf up at MetLife. So, you know, that wasn't shocking that happened, although you're certainly it's worth monitoring with Dobbins. But yeah, Kenyon Drake runs the ball. You know, they average 8.8 yards per carry. And to your point, you know, you have a third quarter drive where you're at the 5-yard line and you don't run the football. Now, you can sit there and say, well, they should have had a touchdown. You know, you got to make catches. You got to make plays. You know, you can call the perfect play call, and if it's not executed, then, well, I don't know what you say about that. But certainly you can second guess it after the fact and first guess it in many cases. I think people are watching that. But, you know, you look at that. How about Ronnie Stanley with Morgan Moses going down? Patrick, you know, it early in the game, it was looking like two series for Stanley, one for McCary, but then Morgan Moses hurts his heel, goes to the locker room, and McCary's playing right tackle. Stanley played the rest of the way and, you know, seemed to hold up okay. You know, I think he was sore after the game, but, you know, he didn't seem any worse for wear in terms of, you know, any kind of major setback or anything like that. So, you know, those are positives, right? I mean, not that you want Morgan Moses hurt, but Ronnie Stanley played every play and, you know, still, you know, held up okay and looked like Ronnie Stanley. So, you know, you look at that, you look at the running game. I mean, there's so many things that you could try to be positive about if the result is different, and you would be positive about it. But
and the result then, was different for 58 minutes.
Sure,
right?
I mean, sure, sure.
They've been winning for played 6 hours of football. They've been losing for less than 3 minutes.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I mean, in their three losses, I mean, it's been a matter of a couple minutes. You know, it's been seconds. You know, that they trailed. Yeah, they did trail in the Cincinnati game. They trailed in the New England game for a while, but overall, there's so much to like. But boy, what you don't like is just complete. It's just a black cloud over this football team right now. And hey, you've got to be better in crunch time. And you know, as much as I just talked about the running game and you know the offensive line blocking, well, Morgan Moses, false start. Patrick Ricard, false start. Patrick Ricard, false start. Morgan Moses, false start. And then you get to late in the game, the illegal formation. Ronnie Stanley's not covered up by presumably some wide receiver. So
then the bad snap. Don't forget that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I'm just, you know, you have these handful of plays and you could say, well, there's so much good. Well, yeah, those handful of plays are costing you football games. So that's what's really, really frustrating about this football team right now, because you see elements of it looking so good. And, you know, I was just looking at Football Outsiders. They do their DVOA, you know, their DVOA efficiency metric. You know, the Ravens are still, I think, third in that, but they're 3-3. I will point out
they're the best 3-3 team in the league.
They might be, but there are a lot of 3-3 football teams right now. I mean, go look around the league right now. Teams that you expected to be really good, not just the Ravens. You know, there are a lot of teams like that right now. So it just, there is, we always talk about parity in the NFL. There's a little more of it than normal this year, beyond looking at Buffalo and Philadelphia at the top. You know, I mean, Kansas City, you know, I'll be at a loss on Sunday for them, but still very much a team that, you know, to be reckoned with as we get closer to January. But there's a lot of that going on. And that's not to forgive the Ravens. That's not to say that everything is fine, but there's a lot of that going on. And what's crazy right now is you look at their remaining schedule. There is not a single opponent on that schedule that currently has a winning record. I'll point out the Ravens don't have a winning record right now either, but it just speaks to where the league is right now. So there's a lot of football to be played. A lot of improvement needs to be made for this football team. That's very evident. I am not shying away from that. I have concerns. And a lot of it at this point, quite frankly, Nestor, is between the ears for this football team. So that being said, I mean, it's still tied for first place in the division. You look at the AFC, I mean, Buffalo at the top and Kansas City. But beyond that, I'm not sitting here and running down a list of teams that I think are better than the Ravens, but there are a lot of teams that are searching for it right now. And the Ravens are certainly on that list, trying to figure out exactly who they're going to be, because you see it look so good for long stretches of football games, but boy, you got to be more complete. And as I mentioned in our previous segment, this is a team that's taken a lot of pride in being a complementary football team, you know, meaning your offense helps out your defense, your special team, vice versa. You know, you that give take. And right now it's the worst kind of complementary football, because they're all taking part in finding ways to lose and inventing new ways to lose and self-destructing at the worst possible moment.
I had occasion for the first time, I literally want to say, not in my life, but certainly in the last 15 or 20 years, where I listened to post-game radio, right? Like, I'm always at the game. I'm always in the locker room. Half the games are on the road. When they were at home, I literally would walk home because I lived six blocks from the stadium. So I was never in my car. I've never listened to Stan White do a post-game, although I like Stan White. I've never listened. I didn't even know who the post-game was. There was a female voice doing the post-game that I had never heard. I never heard of this person or listened to this person. I'm like, who is that? Who is that? Who is that? She never introduced herself. Finally, at the end, she said her name. And then they went to the Keith Mills post game show, and poor Keith's taking phone calls with somebody else. I don't even know who it was. I heard Keith's voice because it's soothing to me. And he got me the internship with Scott Garceau back in 1991 at WMAR. And poor Keith is taking calls about people going to the old favorites. Greg Roman, he sucks. Keith's like, they have 400 yards of offense. You're going to pick on the offensive coordinator. Where are you on the offense and the play calling and where they are? I would say at various points when it works, it's brilliant. When Lamar misses a receiver, it's not brilliant. When Lamar throws off a back foot, you know, across the middle of the field to Pat Ricard and gets picked for the game, it's not good. But there has been, for me this year, the way they're running the offense and the plays that are being called and the way that they can run the ball, because that's it. If they can run the ball, they should be in second and three and second and two all day long and should be able to keep the ball and play keep away and have long drives and all that stuff that we've seen be successful. They've had 18 play drives that fail at the goal line, right? Like that is the way they play. And they're still very capable of doing that. And this dream that Ronnie Stanley would come back and play 60 snaps, right? Like that's now happening. This thought that they're going to get healthier. It's now happened. The fact that Lamar's really healthy in week 7 and hasn't really been popped all year long, like really in a running free, getting out of bounds. He still manages to run a lot of the time without getting touched, getting himself out of bounds. So there's a lot of prosperity in this offense after all of the, is Lamar at OTAs? Who's going to do this? But part of this is about getting Bateman back, right? I mean, part of this is if it's Devin Duvernay and Mark Andrews, it's probably not going to go well. They need more threats. They need more separation. They need better wide receivers for Lamar.
Well, they do. And that's why I kept asking that question after the draft. Again, Marquise Brown, great value. The trade itself, I love the value. It was great value, but ultimately great value doesn't win you football games on Sunday necessarily if you haven't sufficiently replaced the player that you traded away. And I hear you on Rashad Bateman, and I'm not saying that the Ravens should be firing on all cylinders from a passing game standpoint, but you know, the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill and they're still the Chiefs, right? For the most part. I mean, that's where I look at this thing and say, you don't have enough depth. I mean, you just don't. I mean, Mark Andrews was phenomenal on Sunday. I mean, he's over 100 receiving yards and a touchdown. We can debate, you know, I still haven't gotten clarity, but I did not get a chance because I drove 400 miles total up and back from the Meadowlands.
I would have driven half. It's Chad Steele.
The end zone pass where you know, it bangs off his face mask. That was tipped, right? I think. I mean, could he have still caught it? Sure.
No, the ball took a different angle. Like by right, far, okay. The ball awkwardly it skidded really more than anything else.
Yes. Right, right. So that, and that's where I, you know, cause there was even that question was asked and he got snippy in the locker room. I mean, guys are frustrated. I mean, let's be very clear. This is not a case of guys not caring or guys that are completely complacent or anything like that. It's a lot of frustration in that locker room. So, you know, that was something just stream of consciousness just now. I wanted to get clarity from you on that because that's something I didn't have a chance to go back and review as we're talking at the moment. But, you know, it's just, you just mentioned they gain all these yards. And, I mean, and you look at the stats and, you know, statistically, there's a lot to really like about this football team. And, you know, they averaged 7 yards a play on Sunday. They gave up 3.8 yards per play on Sunday. Those two things,
you're going to win a lot of games doing that.
Not just win games, you're generally winning convincingly when you're playing like that. And that's where we kept saying over the course of the football game, they should be up more than 7. They should be up more than 10.
Well, they missed field goal too. I mean, which is unusual.
That was a long field goal. Sure, yeah. sure, no question. I mean, we mentioned special teams. And again, Justin Tucker, despite what we think, is actually human and does miss every once in a while. So, you know, it was a long field goal. And this is where, you know, I have some people, you know, that I see on Twitter. And look, it's just the fan mentality, passionate. And look, Justin Tucker is the greatest kicker of all time. But when I hear people say that he's automatic from 58 yards, it's like, no, he's not. That's why there are times where punting the football does actually make sense in those situations. Not all the time, but certain situations, depending on the elements and whatnot. But, you know, you just look at this thing and that's why I kept saying that they should be winning by more right now. They should be winning by more right now. And again, credit the New York Giants. They're 5-1. People will say, you know, but last week people were, and I was one of them. So you can blame me. Maybe I put the jinx on them, but I was saying that the Giants are one of the worst 4-1 teams I've ever seen. People will say it this week. The Giants are one of the worst 5-1 teams. If you want to look at, you know, dive into the statistics and the metrics and all that different stuff. But couple stats that do stick out. They were 7 of 14 on third down. You know, that one drive they converted a couple long third downs, you know, to ultimately score. And, you know, they ended up being 3 for 5 inside the red zone. And I guess, you know, that's not even counting the, you know, Saquon Barkley, or I guess that's counting Saquon Barkley diving at the very end there, short of the goal line, which was a really smart play. That's something you don't that you see.
Well, I mean, I'm in the casino and I'm like, what's the over under? They're already over. Let's start with that. I'm like, literally, I'm in a casino watching this, and I don't bet, but I was like, man, somebody's ripping a ticket up here one way or another. And the other part of that, as I looked at it, and this is just me, 100,000 feet. If I'm Brian Daboll and I'm studying this, I don't even want to put my defense back out on the field and have them backpedal against Lamar. I just want to end the game. I want as few plays as possible. I don't need to have hero points by winning by 11 points, you know, whatever the number is. There was a point where that happened, and I thought most teams in the history of the game would have gone in, taken the touchdown, kicked the ball off with a 2-score lead, right? Can't catch us, but then you got to go out there and play, and maybe your safety turns an ankle. It's just getting the game over with. That's a grown up move by the Giants. It really is, because there's a lot of go ahead in, pad your stats, get your numbers, like all you know. I'm going to score a touchdown because it's there, coach. There's the goal line. I'm going in. It's a touchdown. Boy, that's a different way to play it. To end the game and not put the defense back out, take a knee, all over with. I thought that was really, really grown up.
That was the higher win probability play right there. It was. And to add another layer to that, it's Saquon Barkley, who, let's face it, the last couple of years with the injuries, he's going to be a free agent this offseason. You're telling me that he as an individual wouldn't have liked having another touchdown to go to add to his stats come March? When he's going to be hitting the free agent market or the Giants are trying to re-sign him, whatever ends up happening. So, yeah, and you see more of that now. It comes down to this. In that situation, when you slide and you get the first down and you're in a position where you can go to victory formation, it now becomes what is the win probability of being up 11, but the Ravens have the ball and knowing that Lamar could throw a bomb, he could break off an 80-yard touchdown run, and then suddenly there's an onside kick coming after that. Or it's the odds of whatever the probability is of fumbling away a snap on a quarterback kneel, which
Joe
is
Pisarcik.
Very, very, very minor.
It happened,
right?
In the Meadowlands. So, it did.
Well, but keep in mind that was before they started doing the victory formation. Yeah, that's one of the plays that led to teams inventing the victory formation and the kneel and everything, because they said, hey, we're not going to hand it. I don't care if it's our most shorthanded fullback or running back. We're not going to hand it off. So
Herm Edwards still eating off that.
But you're right. He is. But it was a mature play. And it's something that, they're right there. As much as people hammer analytics and fourth down decisions and things of that nature, that is an analytic minded play right there, because you're saying, I will take the higher win probability of keeping possession of the ball. The opposition cannot stop the clock to get the ball back. They're going to use their last two timeouts and the clock's still going to expire. And I'll take the higher win probability of having a 4-point lead, but I'm snapping it and taking knees, compared to going up 11 or 12, whatever you would decide to do with the conversion try, and the other team having the ball. And we saw this play out with the Jets and the Browns earlier this year. The Browns, Nick Chubb goes in the end zone, and Joe Flacco and the Jets won that game, even though they were down 2 scores very, very late. Now, that said, if Barkley scores there, do the Ravens realistically have much of a chance? No, of course not.
But through the history of football, that running back goes into the end zone 99% of the time.
Yeah.
They take the two, and they're right. We're up two, got a minute left. God bless you. You can't win. And that's right. But God bless you can't win puts 60 DBs in the back running around, right? Now you're rushing the quarterback. You're bringing your D-line back out. End the game. End the game. And that was – he's a smart coach.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, Saquon Barkley doing the team thing right there. I mean, a smart play by him too. So, I mean, really in that spot – and again, we're kind of splitting hairs here. You're talking about – what they did probably gave them a win probability of, I don't know what the probability would be of fumbling a snap on a quarterback kneel. I don't know if I've ever seen that, quite frankly. It would be like 99.9%, 99.95%, let's say, compared to if you score a touchdown there where it's probably 99%. But they took the higher win probability play and they ended the football game with the ball in their hands rather than giving Lamar Jackson and the Ravens the tiniest shot of a miracle at the end. So, I mean, as much as we're talking about the Ravens' shortcomings in this football game, and boy, there are a lot of them, that's where you do, even if it's begrudgingly, have to give the Giants their props, because they're feisty. They're very feisty, and they're playing smart football. And you look at, you know, the numbers, as ugly as they were for them. I mean, 3.8 yards per play is not good. That's not good offensively. But they did not make a lot of mistakes, and they hung around long enough to wait for their opponent to make some mistakes. And boy, the Ravens did it in the end.
It's Cleveland week around here. Luke will be in Owings Mills. He will not be as up late as he was last week because we have less baseball teams playing and less middle of the night. Hey, 18-inning games, dude. We have, you know, I fell asleep, woke up. The game was still going on. I woke up at 12:30 in the morning on Saturday night, and I was like, man, I hope the Padres won. It was like, oh, man, they're losing 2-0 in the seventh. Then they give up another run. I'm awake in the middle. The baseball was amazing. We're going to be doing baseball all week around here. I had Tyler Kepner on the show this week talking World Series in his book. So I'll be getting some baseball in because I've been watching a lot of baseball. And when the Phillies and the Padres are in the National League Championship Series, Luke, that would have been like a little boy's dream for me back in 1981 to have my Phillies hat, my Padres hat. So I might even be going up to Philadelphia this weekend to check out the Padres, wear my Tony Gwynn jersey a little bit, have cheesesteaks and whatnot thrown at me here this week. But in the meantime, Ravens getting ready for the Cleveland Browns. You know, you mentioned inefficiencies and good records and where the Eagles are at 6-0. There is something about really feeling good about yourself when you're 5-1 or 6-0 this time of year. I felt that way for the Eagles fans and for your brother-in-law and Brett Dickinson and anybody else, Cheryl Laird, that loves the Philadelphia Eagles in my world. But this is a time where you don't win the Super Bowl in October. And for a regroup with the Ravens, all of these names, you know, these players that have been injured, players we're trying to get back on the field, whether it's J.K. Dobbins with a tighten up. We got Stanley back on the field now. We're waiting on Tyus Bowser, the legend of David Ojabo, all of that. There is a point where it's a lot more nerve wracking right now in Owings Mills. It's fun in Philly. You're 6-0. And I'm thinking when they went to 6-0, I'm like, what are the odds of them not making the playoffs now? It's pretty, you know, like October 17th, a little different because of 17 games versus 16 games. But you're starting to get to the point here where you're like, okay, the Steelers, they're not dead. They beat Tom Brady. The Browns can sort of kind of put us in last place by beating us this week. And then the Ravens have to get up and play 4 days later. This, if you were to look at the schedule when it came out in April, this is the toughest 10 days of the schedule for them. Like and where they are reeling at 3-3. And trying to figure this out. They got to play two football games here in a very, very short order here over the next 10 days. This is a spot where you're just praying for a split or something, right? But the split begins with, you better not spit this up against the Browns this week. And the Browns play us tough and blah, 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 blah. But the Browns are not a pushover here in the traditional sense. They still got a great roster. This is a worrisome week that you could lose to the lowly Browns, fall into potentially last place and be a 3-4 team, having to go on short rest and see Tom Brady. This is a dangerous week for the Ravens.
Not to mention you go on the road the following week to New Orleans, which I'm not saying the Saints are anything special either. But again, at some point in time, you know, it's one thing to lose to the Dolphins and the Bills, but then when you do it to the Giants too, from a talent level standpoint, it feels like the Ravens are capable of losing to just about anyone. You know, I think they're capable of beating just about anyone, but they're 3-3 for a reason, right? You're doing a lot of good, but you're also doing some not so good. And that's where the Ravens are. But it's very much, this is a key three games here going into the bye week where, as you mentioned, it's Cleveland, it's an AFC North game. The Browns are, I'm having a tough time figuring them out because there are certain things they do really well and have done really well this year, including Sunday aside. And I didn't see a minute of that game, but you know, Jacoby Brissett has done some nice things for them at times this year. You know, they have Nick Chubb. I mean, they run the ball, but you know, even though Sunday they actually stopped the run fairly, you know, they were fairly okay in that department. You know, it was Bailey Zappe making plays with his arm, but you know, the Browns have struggled to stop the run. So you would think that's a good thing for the Ravens, but it's an AFC North matchup. We know how that works. So you have that. You go to Tampa Bay, as you mentioned, short week. The Buccaneers are very much trying to find themselves. I mean, you know, that one, I was surprised because you can say what you want about the Steelers not being dead. Anyone who's watched them, you know, until Sunday, they've been awful. You know, for a Mike Tomlin team, they've been awful. So for
and
them,
they had six starters defensively not playing.
Right. So for them to win, I mean, yes, credit them for Sunday, but their whole body of work has not been impressive. So, you know, it's just the league's crazy, right? It's week to week. We say it every year and then we overreact every week, correct? And I'm guilty of that too. But it very much is a case of, you know, if you're the Ravens, you know, you don't want to be in a position here where you're suddenly going into, you know, into the bye week and you're 4-5, right? I mean, you don't want to be in that kind of spot. So this is a very key three-game stretch here, and specifically these first two games. But as I mentioned, even going to New Orleans, you know, they'll have the benefit of a couple extra days rest after the Thursday night road game. But, you know, you want to be in a position where you're not going into the bye week saying, boy, we've got a lot of work to do. You know, so the time is now for them to start stacking some wins. And, you know, you mentioned it, they're getting healthier in spots, you know, but at the same time, they lose some guys. I mean, they lost Marcus Williams last week. So there's never going to be this time. And this is part of what I have concern about with this Ravens team going back to last year, where from a mental standpoint, is there this sense of, oh, we're going to be better once we get this guy back or this happens? Or at some point in time, you just got to go out and win football games and you're not going to be fully healthy. The variables aren't going to be perfect every single week. You got to go out and take care of business. And they had a chance to do that Sunday and they did not. And they come home 3-3. And as you mentioned, a very, very critical 10-11 day period coming up for this football team.
We are going to talk about the defense of Mike McDonald. Also, we'll talk more about the Cleveland Browns. Get ready for these three games before the bye. We start to talk about where they were on Sunday with the Meadowlands and Lamar Jackson and the mistakes of Lamar Jackson. I've written a column. It's called Columnist at Baltimore Positive. Luke will be in Owings Mills all week long doing predictions and thoughts and observations and trying to get more players back out onto the field, especially on the defensive side of the ball. We'll get an update on Tyus Bowser as well as David Ajabo. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We're going to be at Gunpowder Lodge on Friday doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, all presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation. You buy two, you get two free, 866-90-NATION, and our friends at Goodwill reminding you, Halloween right around the corner. Get dressed up, do something scatty, and make sure you use the Goodwill headquarters or superstores is your shopping location for all things Halloween. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.